Senator Dick Durbin, the Democrat lawmaker from Illinois, the U.S. Senator, is on a phone line. Senator, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
John, can I say a word as we start? I just heard Friday that Orrin Samuelson is retiring. And I can tell you, like so many who listen to this station, he is a man we respect. He is the credible voice for Illinois farming. We're going to miss him, but he is the best.
Well, it's really nice of you to say. I didn't know that you knew that, and I didn't know that you would say that, but I got a stack of text messages from listeners who were saying the very same thing, and it's nice that you noticed that, too. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on in the Capitol. What's going to happen with the president's Supreme Court nominee?
There's going to be an accelerated schedule to bring together information. It will be faster than almost any time in history. The determination of the president is to get this vote in the Senate before the election. And you say to yourself, what is the hurry? Why? We let a vacancy with Antonin Scalia go on for months. Why does this have to be filled in weeks? Well, I'm afraid it's pretty obvious. There's going to be an oral argument on the future of the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, on November the 10th. If a justice is not sitting in for that oral argument, traditionally they won't vote on the final decision on the case. They want a new justice on the court for this argument. We know how the president feels about eliminating it. We know, unfortunately, that so far, Amy Coney Barrett from Notre Dame has said the same thing. So what's at stake is coverage for 20 million Americans. What's at stake is the protection in our health insurance that we can't be discriminated against for pre-existing conditions. It's a pretty important vote.
Mitch McConnell said that the president will have the votes even before it was announced who that person would be. I suppose the flip is also fair to consider. How can Democrats say we won't vote for that person until they've had a chance to interview them and examine their record? Will you vote for her?
At this point, I'm not going to commit until we go through the ordinary process. Consider even more closely what she's written, what she said. Ask her questions. I'm going to tell you a long list, John. 15 minutes won't be enough to get through it. And I'm sure my colleagues feel the same. It was disappointing when the Republican side, even before the nominee was named, said, we're all voting for whoever it is. That really doesn't give a lot of credence to the committee or the process.
Some of my listeners, though, have said, wouldn't the Democrats do the same? Were they reversed?
Well, that's a logical thing. That's what Lindsey Graham said. Yes, he reversed himself from the rule interpretation by Senator McConnell four years ago. He dared people to bring it up if he ever contradicted himself and then turned around and contradicted himself. And he said, well, you'd do the same thing. Well, there's a lot of cynicism about politics, and much of it is deserved. But I really think consistency and mutual respect for your colleagues in the Senate has to be part of any plan to bring credibility back to the Senate.
Well, I do understand that the president is the sitting president, and that is the existing Senate. So maybe the sin here isn't what's happening now, but what happened to Merrick Garland 4 years ago, right?
Well, you can have it one way or the other. You can take the McConnell rule that meant that we left the vacancy in place for 10 months or more, and that President Obama, despite having 270 days left in his term, was declared unfit or unwilling or unable to fill the vacancy. That, to me, was just plain wrong. And now Senator McConnell has reversed himself completely when it's to his political advantage. It doesn't give politics a good name.
But the politics of it is different now. He said that the president and the Senate were different parties in Obama's case. They're the same here. So the people have spoken with one voice.
John, he didn't even raise that point 4 years ago. You know, they're carping on a trifle as far as I'm concerned. Here's the bottom line. If there's a vacancy in a timely manner before an election, it's up to the president to decide. Similar circumstance, Roger Taney died, longest serving justice of the Supreme Court. Abraham Lincoln said, too close to the election. We're not going to fill it till after the election. In this case, of course, just the opposite's true. Donald Trump wants to fill this because of the Affordable Care Act, and then he announced a new basis for it last week. He thinks there may be an election contest, and he wants to have a friendly justice there, nine justices, if that happens.
Do you have a guess on how this nomination will go? Will all of the things that need to happen happen, and will she get approved?
I can tell you that when you look at the Senate rules, and I know them a little better than some, there's nothing we can do to stop what is going to occur. We may slow it down a bit. But if Mitch McConnell has a clear 60 minutes on the Senate floor before the new president is sworn in, who I hope will be Joe Biden, he's going to fill that vacancy.
One last thing, though. What do you make of expanding the size of the Supreme Court so as to dilute that appointment?
Well, there have been suggestions about that now more than ever, but there's no serious conversation underway. It's just speculation by theorists. We have it all the time. I haven't made a decision on that. I hope I don't have to.
Well, even if you did, it's not like you can snap your fingers and amend the U.S. Constitution, even in a couple of years.
The Constitution does not set out the number of Supreme Court justices. I believe that can be done by statute. But no, there's no serious discussion about doing that. I don't know if we'll ever reach that point.
Do you have? Did you get a chance to read the New York Times reporting on the president's taxes?
Well, I've heard a lot about it. And I did read this morning's paper online. And now we understand why he has gone to such great lengths to conceal these tax returns. You knew there had to be something in there that was troubling or embarrassing. And now it turns out the president just didn't pay taxes. 10 out of 15 years before he was sworn in as president, average American family pays $12,000 a year in federal taxes. This president paid nothing. This it relates to his personal taxes. And it also turns out when they look at these tax returns that his business empire is not quite as strong as he brags about. He has $300 or $400 million in debt coming due quickly. Now, why is that even important to talk about? Well, somebody loaning the money, and somebody wants to be paid, and he's going to have to find a way to do it. And his business decisions will be significant, not only in terms of his business interest, but whether there's any possible conflict of interest with his public responsibility.
Senator Durbin, that's why when I get to be king someday, I'm going to mandate that the president, I don't know why I will need a president if I'm king, but I'm going to mandate that taxes be disclosed, and also that presidents can no longer, they have to put their finances in a blind trust so that they can't know and can't do anything about their companies.
John, I was lucky. When I got started in politics, I worked as an intern for a fellow named Paul Douglas and for many years for Paul Simon. And they believed what you just said and convinced me of the same. And I've disclosed my income tax return every year I've been in public office. I go detailed in terms of my income disclosure, too. And the bottom line is this. People may disagree with a vote that I cast, but I want to let them know that it's based on policy and not on personal enrichment. I think that's something everyone should do.
I know you have to go, and we're out of time for this segment, Senator, but will you just comment briefly on your confidence in voting this time around? I'm voting by mail. My wife doesn't want to. How are you voting, and what do you make of people's apprehension about the process?
I missed our first window for an interview this morning because I voted this morning. I went in Sangamon County to the clerk's office, cast my ballot. I know it's done. There wasn't a long line. Of course, it depends on where you go and when you go, but I'd say to people, you can trust it. Just make sure that you request your ballot before October 19th. That's what the postal authorities tell us, before October 19th, and send it back no later than October 27th. So it will be postmarked before November 3rd, and that way it will be counted. Illinois has a law which helps. It says that if the ballot has been postmarked on or before November 3rd, you have up to 2 weeks for it to be delivered by the Postal Service to your election authority. So there's a good opportunity that it'll make it in time. So above all, to everyone listening, this is an historic, important election. However you're going to cast your vote, be counted.
One last question. Are you privy to any Senate polling on which way the Senate's going to go? Do you have an insight on that?
It changes by the week. There are four states that we feel confident about, good about, I should say, not confident, good, at this moment. We also have a couple incumbents who are back and forth. So there's a lot of uncertainty there. It could be a landslide year. You never know in terms of the election turnout.
Landslide which way, Senator?
Not sure. Hope it's our way, my way.
Senator, it's good to talk to you. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, John.